Welcome to Mature Allure, where we highlight the experiences and perspectives of women in midlife. Today, I'm really excited about having as our guest, Toriann Hampton. Hi, Toriann. How are you?
Hi, Sherry. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you. So tell us a little bit about Toriann. Who is she? What does she do?
Thank you. So, I started as an educator. I have nearly two decades now of experience as an educational executive, and I've kind of dedicated my life to designing and facilitating human-centered learning opportunities that, you know, spark innovation, get people thinking critically about how to solve problems, and empower creative problem solving, because that's where the workforce is like moving toward, right? We have a lot of problems. Yes. We need to zoom out and start thinking about how might we explore these challenges that we're facing. So I've worked with elementary, middle, high school students, educators, nonprofit organizations to do this work. I'm also an actor, so that helps me out a lot when it comes to speaking and playing games and getting in there and wanting to figure it out. I've been curious my whole life, trying to understand something. If there's something, I'll watch a TV show and I'll do all the research while I'm watching the show to understand the historical context of what's going on, what was happening, what really happened, what's the true story. So everything that the way I work plays into how I live as well.
That sounds good. Would you consider what you do creative, like problem solving and solutions, would you think of that as like pivoting? Because some people have a hard time, like life comes and hits you, believe me, I know, and you just gotta pivot.
Yes, I was not always great at pivoting. It requires like a lot of self-reflection, a lot of you know, there's this new term, well, recent term in education, social emotional learning, where you're focusing on like self-awareness, social awareness, responsible decision-making, all these competencies that we didn't get as children in the learning spaces. But there's opportunity to bring that into our workspaces so that we can see, okay, like let's take the focus off of the people who are doing the thing, and let's look at the people who are experiencing the problem. Take it off of yourself. It's a lot easier to talk about what the problem is.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you say an instructional designer or and facilitator, can you go into that? I know you've explained it a little bit, but in a little more detail, can you explain it?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So as an instructional designer, this is where I guess a pivot comes in for me within my own profession. It's a quite natural pivot for educators. Instructional designers focus on finding cognitive gaps in training and development within an institution or business and design learning that will benefit the team, staff, employee to know how to make that sandwich. So it could even be like, okay, we are making this sandwich at restaurant A, and you know, this person makes the sandwich really, really well, but how do we train everyone to make the sandwich, like use this magic sauce? So designing professional learning experiences for teams who want more continuity within the scope of business or service that they're providing. I do this a lot with educators, making sure that, okay, we're delivering this program. How can we deliver it with more fidelity? What is the cognitive gap? Why does this person understand it in this way? But if I go over here, this person understands they're using two different definitions for the same term. So how can we clear that up? And is that even the problem that we're having? So instructional designers are truly looking at, you know, what is happening? Let me observe. Let me figure out what the cognitive gap is. What do employees or talent team members need to learn? And then let me design that experience. And that could be a live in-person training, which you might be facilitating. That could be a online experience that someone's going through on their own. But it's really about figuring out, like, what is that point? What's that magic sauce? How do we turn that miserable into magical for the team member who has to go through the experience?
So can this be used in this process be used in any industry? Or is there, I know you said you work with mainly teachers and educators, but what other industries is this like good for, or have you worked in?
Yeah, this is great for any, like I've seen this position with, as I mentioned before, food restaurants or like specifically chains, especially if you're trying to get that fidelity across the board. Credit card companies. I've seen a lot of like, how do customer service, how are we training our folks to communicate with our customers and clients so that we're getting those higher scores of success rates, right? Mm-hmm. So again, my expertise is in education, but typically an instructional designer works with a subject matter expert. So it's not that I need to know what is it that they need to do. I would coordinate with a subject matter expert because I have to teach. I understand how people learn. And like I said, it was a quite natural pivot as a classroom teacher to move into this industry because learning is universal. Like it's constant and companies want that continuous learning model. They want to implement that within their programs so that they can see the success rates. They want to see how, if I support and nurture and develop the talent that I have, how can that impact our bottom line? That's essentially it.
Well, when you're putting together a program for, let's say, any company, when you're putting one together, how do you go about, along with working with the subject matter experts, how do you go along with, how do you put about a plan? Do you include like team building, coaching? Like, how do you kind of put that together and what percentage? I know I'm asking a lot maybe, but like just so people can understand a little bit more, because even I, when I saw it, I was like, oh wow, I'm really interested in this. I wasn't quite sure. Really what it meant, you know, but I'm like, wow, okay, this is interesting. So how do you go about putting together a plan or a program?
No, that's a great question. I think that as an instructional designer, as an educator, as anyone in your field, you have your system and protocols that you follow. Mm-hmm. And if you have a framework on how to design, whether it's a space or it's a system or it's, you know, a learning goal, you first have to start with what's the initial ask, right? The managers are coming and they're saying, oh, this is a solution that we need. Do we know that that is the solution? Like what evidence do we have? So typically what I like to do, and I'm working on a project right now where I've been given a starter request and I'm guiding our design team through our strategy design. So basically, we're looking at, here was the starter request. What challenges are coming up with this request, like that we feel we could be successful with that request? It also involves us talking to, interviewing, observing stakeholders. Who are the key stakeholders in this project? Like, who is this going to impact? Who are the decision makers? Who are the voices who are going to have to report to on the success of this, you know, starter request? What are our metrics that we're going to be measuring? Mm-hmm. And what does success look like? What are our guiding principles? So by having a design strategy, we're going in with like our North Star, and then we're bringing in our learner perspective. That could be an empathy map. That could be, learner persona, and we're making a seat for that person, for that learner. as we are designing, because it's not about what the manager, senior management thinks they need to solve the problem. It's about like, what does this person need in order to grow in that area? Mm-hmm. So really starting with building your understanding around that, so you can have a clear North Star as you begin designing, and you're clear about the metrics, because everyone wants to know what's the impact of the outcome and how does this affect our bottom line. So once we have that in place, bring in subject matter experts to ideate and brainstorm with us on some of those solutions. Our team might do that because it's a collaborative effort, truly. So finding the right people to work with and that you do a really great job collaborating with is key in any kind of creative process. So once we ideate and kind of think about the structure of what it is we are going to design, that's when we might outline kind of the content, right? That's when we get into the content, because we're clear, we have our strategy focus, we know the desired outcomes of what we're designing. We have clear objectives that align with the goals of the project that we want the learner to be able to do after going through this. Mm-hmm. And we have assessments or tasks that or activities that align with showing if the learner has completed that and to what degree. Mm-hmm. And so that's when we bring in the content experts, the subject matter experts to review. Like, is this what you were talking about? And a lot of times people will give you either what they've used before and the outcomes of that learning. So you'll be able to go through and kind of see, and as an educator, like really see like, okay, they wanted their learners to achieve this goal. Do these activities get them to achieving that goal? Like, was it effective? Did it impact the learner? And also, did the learner like going through the process? That's a huge learn something. You gotta get into it, right?
Exactly. And I was gonna ask you, like, do you get pushback, whether it's from managers or learners, and how do you deal with that?
Oh yeah, pushback is part of it. It's a big part of it. You're gonna get feedback constantly on what should have been done, or not liking this part, or this didn't work at all. And one of the ways to kind of mitigate that is to pilot and test out what it is that you're putting out there. Like, don't just, we made the thing and then boom, we are putting it out to everyone. Don't do that. And don't be like, I learned this. I was like, oh, I made this new program and I thought it was so clear. And I was like, oh, I am 90% sure. Like, I was giving percentage rates on how successful I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And then I learned after implementing it, like, oh, people, and watching people use it, because that's huge. You have to watch, how are people using this? Because just because you put it in a book or write it on a sheet of paper, you have your process document, does not mean that people are going to use that. Mm-hmm. You can say, oh, I wrote it in an email. I don't understand why everyone's not getting. Because you thought that you communicated so getting a prototype done quickly so that you can test it out, and you want to kind of do like small doses so you can test it out and see like, okay, well, what if you've created something, an interactive tool for folks to work with on. Then you're looking at, okay, what you're asking, you're providing surveys following that, right? You are doing focus groups. You are getting from the user, like, was this effective? What did you like about it? What didn't you like about it? My favorite question is, if you had a magical wand, like, what would you do? How would you change this? Because they're experiencing it. You're designing it. So you have two very different points of views. They're not coming in at it into the experience like, okay, these are the steps to learning. And they're coming into the experience that I have to do this thing. My work said I have to go to this thing.
Yeah.
I'm here because. So if you can build in some, if you can gamify it, if you can make it fun, if you can, you know, put some joy into it, if you can think about how you want them to feel as they go through it, like those are elements that are game changers because people want to feel good. People mm-hmm. want to have joy. So what might that look like in this experience? Test it out, get the feedback, go back to the drawing board, iterate, find the spots where you can make significant impact with small tweaks.
Mm, mm.
That's what you're looking for as the designer. You're like, okay, what would be that game changer? And that game changer is something that's intrinsic for the learner.
Yeah.
And that's when you're like, yes. Yes, low.
So do you facilitate when you're doing the program? Do you facilitate the process? And how long does it usually take? Is it like a week? Is it a month? I mean, I know it would probably vary depending on the outcomes that the business or company might want, that type of thing. But usually how long does a whole program take?
That's a great question. I used to, a lot of times people think like, oh, this is really quick. You're going to put this thing together and then we're just going to get it. Boom. Wow. And that's not exactly how it works. Typically, and they've done research on this. So typically for something to be like viable, right? A viable product, it takes about 40 hours to design 1 hour.
Oh, wow.
If you're doing something that's like really low stakes, really low res prototype, about 20 hours for 1 hour.
Wow.
So it's kind of thinking about like, what's the entry point? What do you want for your outcome? So something that's like 3 hours, if it's a 3 hour training, and you want something that you can replicate and use again and again, and anyone on our team can do that. You're looking at between 120, 200 hours of work to get that complete. So I think people, you know, I always have to kind of walk people back. This is the project that you want. These are the outcomes that you want because we have to do research. We have to talk to people and there are ways to speed it up. But when it comes to like the design and effectiveness to have those outcomes that you desire, because here's the thing, if it took 3 hours to do, this position wouldn't even exist.
Exactly. It's like, there would be no need. And that's the thing. People think of things like that. Like as a writer, I remember when I worked in corporate in the office, people were like, oh, can you just write this, this, this? It's like, well, if it was just like you're saying, you would just write it. Like I wouldn't be here doing this like this. But so I could see how you would have to explain because I had no idea it took that long. Yeah. And then to take all of those hours to put together a program that, like you said, I mean, usually when you go in to do the program with a group of people or however you do it, at that point, what's the average? Would you say it's like 3 days or a half a day workshop or just so people can kind of get an idea of how long the workshop itself takes versus the time put into it?
That's a great question. Typically when I am, like I have a workshop coming up this summer, I'm working with a group to do something with social emotional learners for Black educators, focusing on that. And typically folks want to be like, oh, can you come and do it in an hour? And I'm like, an hour to like learn something that you want people to then like have some ownership with. You can, but like, where are your learners? right? Like if they already are using this, these strategies and have an understanding of something, of whatever skill you want to work on. Yeah, I need to figure out where they are so I can design activities around that. But the reality is that people want to share what they know in mm-hmm. these training spaces. They want to have facilitated conversation around the topic, and they want to have clear takeaways. And when you're making room for others to talk, that's where facilitation comes into place.
Yeah.
Because once people understand how the protocol for how we are going to have conversations, you can move those things around. You can mm-hmm. move those things like a little faster. But I typically like to spend about minimum three hours on a topic. If the outcome or the goal of the training is that they're going through a process, well, processes take time. You have mm-hmm. to practice that. You have to give feedback and you have to have conversation. Then we're looking at like a longer training.
So how did you, because you mentioned pivoting, being an educator, it was easy for you to pivot into this. How did you decide to pivot in this into this direction? And if somebody was interested in doing this, because it is really interesting, if someone was interested in getting into this as maybe either a second career or something on the side, mm-hmm. you know, just to kind of learn more about it, can you give us information about that?
Absolutely. So As I shared, I did begin as a classroom teacher, moved into designing out of school programs, and then I moved into a position where I do curriculum design. And through that position, I was like, that was a pivot for me, because now I'm looking at, this is the tool that educators are going to use to then deliver the student experience. And so I was able to get a lot of training. I was introduced to the design thinking process, which mm-hmm. is a framework that guides you through human-centered designing. This is something that a lot of universities are focusing on now, but I think like the heart of it started at Stanford at the D School. And so I started listening to podcasts, reading books, because I was utilizing that process in my new position. And through mm-hmm. that position, I was able to get additional training. Like I got to go to the executive boot camp at the D School to learn from the people who do it every day. And I didn't realize just how much educators are designers. I think mm-hmm. everyone is a designer, truly. And I think if you can reframe how you are approaching the work that you're doing so that you're like, oh, well, what is it that I'm actually doing? I am engaging all of these different humans and they're all stakeholders. And I have to consider all of them as I'm designing whatever experience I'm designing, whether that is, what is their entry point? They might not be there at the program, but the administrator has to have an entry point into even understanding what this program is. Mm-hmm. How is that translated to, you know, the parents who also aren't there? They yeah. want to know what their students are doing. How does that translate to the educators who were asking, hey, give up your time? So I found myself working with adults a lot more than I had in the past. And so that created this pivot into instructional design and thinking about, well, is this a skill? Is this a lack of skill or a lack of knowledge? And how can I bring them into it? So again, the information is everywhere. Read. I signed up for another workshop on instructional design. There are lots of workshops on like Coursera or, you know, and you can access some of these free through your local public library. I purchased books on how to use the design thinking process with instructional design, and learn those strategies and practice them in my work so that I could build out my skill set. And I brought in other people who were doing the same thing And I said, hey, this is a way we could all pivot and build another skill set and then help each other because we're all using the same strategy. So right now, my team of designers, we're all working through the same book so that there's a shared language. And then we're able, once you cultivate your system and your way of doing things, then it's just, it's a plug and play.
Okay. Yeah. So then what specifically, what kind of client, is there a specific client that you're looking for with the services that you offer? Like what kind of client do you look, seek out?
A creative woman. Someone who, like, I truly am looking for someone who wants to solve the problem that they have because I believe that you can get a lot of like quick fixes, you know, and the thing is that as people evolve within your system, within your teamwork, if that person leaves, all that information is walking out the door. And you're not going to hire someone who is typically, you're not going to hire someone that's right at that skill set.
Yeah.
Because it's an opportunity to like save money.
Yeah.
Oh, we can start back down here. So then if you're a small team, that really impacts how your team is moving. I would love to work with small teams because I know that they typically are asked to do a lot of work. In the scope and are oftentimes over capacity, and that's truly a problem I would love to solve. I would like to go into spaces where maybe this is new as well, because I think that if you can empower the community that you're in to be problem solvers, to zoom out and think about like, oh, what would be the game changer in doing and strategize so that they can impact the people that they're serving. I would love to step into a space like that. It's a challenge sometimes because you're dealing with a mindset, right? Yeah. It's the design thinking process. So you have to shift how people are thinking, which is huge.
Exactly. So then let me ask, because I'm trying to get down to really the nuts and bolts of like, if there's somebody out there that needs your services, what kind of problems, just as what you've come across, some examples of problems that people might be wanting to solve. And like you said, especially if they're a small group, they might not even know, they know they kind of have this problem, but you know, sometimes you get so used to a problem, it becomes normal this is an issue. There's someone out there that can help me fix it. So what are some examples?
Some examples would be just how to solve problems within their team. Like, do they have a strategy? Is it clear? And are all of their team members utilizing it? A lot of times I find people go to trainings and have these experiences, but like, how are you bringing that back to what you're doing within your organization? So anyone who's looking for how can we better facilitate our meetings so that we can actually get to solving the problem? A lot of times it can turn into dumping, like a rabbit hole. We're going down a rabbit hole. We're not even talking about the thing. We're just bringing up more and more problem. So if you're struggling with that, I can definitely help bring in some tools to help your team move through things with intention. Communication is also a really big challenge, I think. And I think anytime you're doing a project, communication is one of the major factors.
Yeah.
And so how are you communicating with your stakeholders? Is that clear? Are they understanding what it is that you're even doing and how to come to you when they need support? And as well as effective management, I think like having the right protocols in place. I hear a lot, especially from early career professionals, I don't even know who I go talk to about task A, B, C, or the problem that I'm having. So being able to, you know, it's more of a cultural and systems problem. I would definitely be interested in tackling some of those things. And I think that communication, how we work together as a team, and how we solve problems are in every single industry. And so that's where I would definitely like to work with. I've sat in a lot of staff meetings and I was like, this could have been an email, right? Like, we hear that often. So how can we determine like what our staff meeting is even about, and how do I know who to bring in for projects? And again, like small organizations typically tend to have those challenges. I think mm-hmm. I can be effective in those spaces.
Oh, okay. Great. I was just, when you were talking, I was thinking about some of the positions I've had over the years, and like, you could have really been a great help. Like, because a lot of times, like, I guess when I'm hearing you, I'm thinking of the learner as being, of course, the employee, but the learner could be like, if you have management that you need training or on the same page or thinking, I mean, there's so many industries and departments within the industry that could use your services. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. Like I said, I'm sitting here like, man, she could have showed up at my office and really worked some things out, because everyone was crazy and all of our meetings were just like dumping.
Yeah.
Anything done. So every meeting, you know, you have this meeting once a week and it's like dump and 5 minutes worth of actual real work. But so I'm trying to think what else? So can you just like give us an overview? Because again, this show is about women who are in midlife, and I use that term loosely, 40 to whatever. What would you say, how would you describe your life now? Because you do, it sounds like, what you want to do and what you enjory doing. How do you see Tori Ann Hampton in the prime of her midlife right now?
This is an exciting question. When I saw it in your email, I was like, oh, midlife.
Like, right.
Like, what is that? I just turned 40 this summer.
Mm-hmm.
So the last couple of years, I've spent a lot of time reflecting on like, what patterns have I even noticed in my own life? And like, do I want to continue that pattern? Because yeah. I already did the first half of my life that way. Did I like it? So now, one thing that I am very excited about is just defining things how I see it. I don't need someone to tell me I am something, or, you know, X, or I can do this or do this. Like, no, I put time into researching. I put effort into training. I learned how to do these things, and I can learn how to do anything.
Yeah.
And so understanding my brain, understanding how past experiences impacted me, and deciding like, oh, do I want to stunt on people every day? Yeah, I'm going to stunt today. And yes. that's I can do that. And I think mm-hmm. like that confidence, that it was like, I mourned like my first part of life because I spent so much time thinking about how do I live up to these norms, and oh, I didn't reach this goal yet that I thought I should reach. And yeah. I spent a lot of time worrying about that. And like, when I think about that reflection, I'm like, okay, I already did that.
Mm-hmm.
I worried. I tried to be how and what I thought others wanted. And now I like just saying what it is that I feel and how I feel it, and calling stuff out.
Exactly.
And, hey, that's not going to work for me. Or I need to go and take this walk. My brain needs to process all of this information. Mm-hmm. Or I want to do this podcast. So I'm going to get on this podcast and talk to Sherry. If I know what I'm talking about 10 years ago, I wouldn't have done it.
But see, that's exactly why I think midlife is so important. People start fretting and, oh, I'm getting older. I mean, the alternative, you don't want that. So the only thing you can really do is embrace it. But so many things happen when you're younger and as you move along in age. When you get to 40, 40 plus, you do, like you said, you sort of reflect, you realize that you don't need anyone's approval. You really kind of, and let me tell you, as you get older, you'll realize that more and more and more. You will be like, I don't care. I'm doing what I do. But I like to ask that because I think it's so important for people out there that might be struggling with getting older. And it's nothing to fear. It's actually something to just embrace, have fun with it, and realize, like you said, as you're getting older, you don't have to apologize. You just do what, and you've got the experience. You don't need to wait for anyone to see you. So, yeah, I love that. I love that. Well, Toriann, if you could share with us how people can get in touch with you, if they're interested in just following up with you, using your services, how can they get in contact with you?
Yes. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you for the opportunity to even share that information. Absolutely. If anyone wants to get in contact with me regarding my work as an instructional designer, facilitator, you can reach me at helloblissfulcontent@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Instagram at Toriann Hampton. All of my full name without the hyphen.
Okay.
And so those are the best ways to, and also on LinkedIn, Toriann Hampton, like shoot me a message. That's how I even met Sherry.
I found you. Exactly. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And we'll have to have you back and just to follow up and see what's going on. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
You're listening to the Mature Allura podcast. I'm your host, Sherry O. If you have a topic in mind that you'd like us to cover on Mature Allure, drop us a note in the comments or share it with us on one of our social media channels. Until the next time, remember, self-love is the key to unlocking the radiant allure that shines from within.